Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Kentuckiana Grassroots Radio. Our guest today will be Metro Council Mayor candidate for the GOP, Bob DeVore. We will be speaking on education and dealing with crime prevention. All right, with us today, Bob DeVore. How are we doing, Bob?
Oh, fantastic. How about you, sir?
Doing very well. Now, I guess like we'll go ahead and speak on the issues of crime and violence. Louisville's had a lot in the news over the last couple of years dealing with crime. How does Louisville rank when we look at our state as far as like the amount of high crimes and violence?
Well, using FBI information, the top 10 in our Kentucky's most violent and dangerous cities are number one, Oak Grove, two is Louisville. Louisville is number two. And to me, when it comes to that information, that's pretty sad. The population in 2016 was 683,825. When it comes to violent crimes per 100,000, 650. Property crimes per 100,000 was 4,424. Louisville is looked at as the number one most violent city when it comes to the Kentucky residents. And they face an average of one per 147 chances of being a victim of a violent crime. Now, one out of 47 is pretty bad. Do you agree with that, Matt?
Oh, yeah. And, a popular statistic that's been going on is the murder rate. What was the average for the last 4 years, the murder rate?
Around 105.
Okay, so that would be basically 420 people were murdered in the last 4 years. That's like having a whole neighborhood assassinated.
Yes, sir. Exactly right. Talking about your kids.
I mean,
and that's
the legacy of our mayor that he's gotten. You know, he kind of seems like our neighbor, our city must be shrinking if we've just assassinated a neighborhood, and that's not counting all the other forms of death, like when we talk about drug overdoses and things like that, which is much higher rate from what I've heard. So that's very scary.
That's correct.
All right. So now there's also a lot of tension that's been going on between neighborhoods and law enforcement with police officers. What ideas will you use that could bring the neighborhoods and the police officers together?
Well, I have to give credit to Bishop Lyons. He's the one to bring this up. He was an advocate for Code Green. This document that he showed me this past 2 weeks was really designed by the police officers. What he wanted to do was he wanted to promote it because it helps individuals understand the concept of when you get stopped by a police officer, what is the proper procedures of following through instead of getting upset and then creating a exploded scenario. So one, we need to be calm and collective. Two, we need to be polite and respectful to the police officers. When he asks for your driver's license and other information, go ahead and do that. And if you have a problem with that police officer, you have the right to ask him, sir, why did you stop me? And he should give you that answer. And if he doesn't, then go ahead and ask for his badge number and other information. And he's supposed to give that to you. And if not, the next step is, A, make sure you know exactly where you're at, B, the time and date that you were stopped by the police officer, so you can go ahead and follow the proper procedures and calling their supervisor and file a complaint. And to, a lot of folks don't understand their rights and freedoms when it comes to this, and when we go ahead and explore that opportunity, I think it kind of gives a better connection between the police officer and the citizen.
Yeah. And yeah, I'll tell you what, Bishop Lyon, he has been a guest on the Kentucky Grassroots Radio Show many years ago. We also got to visit his congregation, very active. He's got a real heart for the West End and, you know, just basically for the community itself. So appreciate you working with him. And this is an interesting idea. We talk about Code Green. Now, of course, you know, when we talk about that, you know, one of the biggest things that people think about, we talk about the murder, we're talking about, you know, the highest rated murder we know is dealing with drugs. And when you deal with drugs, then you're also dealing with the gangs that distribute the drugs. Now, wasn't there like a some research done with the U of L on that, on gangs?
I'm pretty sure there is, but I'm going to go one step farther than that. Last Tuesday, I made a statement suggesting that U of L needs to get more involved in identifying the key components on what a gang is all about. Because the gangs in Louisville and all across the United States, one of the things that kids gravitate for is they try to find a false narrative in saying that they're their family. We're in a society with broken families, and kids are looking for love, looking for all the things that make them feel special. And gangs are a luring factor on that. They say, come on into my family, we'll take care of you. As long as you follow our rules, as long as you sell our dope, our drugs, you're a homie. But once you step out, then that's a different story. But as long as you stay in there, you're our family. And to me, U of L can do a lot of research on that and showing those indicators and finding a way to solve that problem and showing, hey, kids, let's try this direction. Let's focus on that instead of other universities spending millions of dollars on, for example, trying to find the special nature of a slug. I mean, there's a lot of money being wasted on research on stupid stuff. So why can't we do some research more into gang violence, gang connections, and why kids are being lured into that false, you know, love triangle? And to me, that's really more important.
So, you know, I think there are some people that complain about profiling. Should we profile local gangs?
I think we should. We need to find out what those indicators are and then attack those indicators saying that, okay, if you want to be loved by real folks, then let the neighborhood get involved, let the churches get involved, let us as individuals be role models to those kids. So they're looking for something and they can't find it. That love bucket is empty and they want to get that love bucket filled and the gangs will do it.
And, you know, we've done some work together and kind of went to some events and stuff involving groups like Youth for Christ and some different what they call parachurch ministries that are outreach to the community. I know with children there's groups for, I say that and I just forgot the name of it, but there's the Good News Club. There was the Good News Club. They kind of works with local schools and outreaches and stuff. So there's stuff out there available. Do you would you kind of see yourself as an agent of helping groups like that reach troubled youth?
Yes, and one thing I would like to see, and this is not my idea, but Bishop Lyons brought this up and he asked me to look into it. We got to find a way to make connections with the neighborhood itself. The Cops for Clergy Network founded in Redland, California in 1982. And their purpose was to break down barriers and that hinders communication between police officers and community at large. This will give us an opportunity chance to focus on what's best to correct those actions and solve those problems. If we can't do that, then how can we be able to reach the kids itself? The mission is we need to save lives, and that's what comes down to it. So when a police officer and a clergy walks together side by side with equal partnership, and they run across gangs, I believe that the gangs will listen to the clergy as much as the police officer, and they could tag team and say, hey, guys, we have a better way to do this. Let's just talk about it and start there.
Yeah, so, you know, that's one of the many means. In general, I think would you see that as, like, we deal with, like, how neighborhoods, you know, kind of expand that a little bit, talking about neighborhoods getting involved to get those kids to be part more of the functioning citizens than those who are outlawed.
That's correct. And citizens, we need to have a voice into the politics of life. And as citizens, we need to get involved in saying that this is our neighborhood, this is our block. We need to walk those, and then we need to find ways to be able to connect with our kids, because our kids are lost. If we can't find that, we're in trouble.
Yeah. All right, so now one thing, a solution that's kind of come up is not just, in a counseling sense, but also the economy itself. Would creating jobs through small businesses make a difference in lowering the violence in our neighborhoods?
I think so, and bringing jobs more back into the West End, I think will help them understand where they're at. They'll be more self-supported. I believe that they'll have more confidence in their own selves, their own beings, and not only that, they'll have confidence in their own neighborhood. And to me, we need to have that cornerstone in going from a dependent class society to independent class society, where they say, this is my turf, this is my job, this is my business. I want to buy services and products for my families, and especially in the West End. Instead of having a corner shop who sells high saturated fats and things that are second-class citizens wouldn't even eat and take, why can't we provide services and opportunities for that end of our society? Because the West End is like anybody else. We're all in the same family, in the same pool, so let's treat each other equally.
All right, let me ask you about this. There's an idea brought up, I think it was federally brought up, but maybe we could look at this at a local level. Could you explain to us the idea of federal free enterprise zones?
In 2014, one of our U.S. senators, Rand Paul, came down and talked about that and said that we can use this as a way to fund projects that will help our West End grow and prosper, such as giving individuals a kickstart in their own small businesses, provide maybe more training for our children, including adults who are displaced by not having a job, focusing on what is trying to keep our areas safer, clean up the backyards, the back alleys of our societies on the West End, it's all like dust on the side roads, and try to create more pride in their own selves. To me, it's just a tool. This free enterprise zone is the opportunity to help them be successful in their endeavors.
Okay. Now, should church? Let's see here. I think we've kind of talked a little bit. What are some ways that churches could get involved in the neighborhoods?
Well, one way they could do this is to go ahead and interconnect with the churches and the school systems. To me, the churches are the backbone of a society. If it weren't for them, schools would never begin, because that's where school started. If we had a true venture between the teacher and, let's say, the layman in that church saying, hey, let's take care of Bobby who has problems with reading. I'll volunteer to help them do that, take an hour of my time and give him the basics, and then give him the tools to be successful in reading. A lot of times, those holes and those cracks in our society, in our school system, the kids fall through. So they don't have the time to really learn even just the basics of ABCs and anything else when it comes to reading. Not only that, our churches can help be an ear to other kids. If there's something going on, let's have the confidence for that kid to go up and see and get a pastor say, hey, you don't mind if I sit down and talk to you about a situation? That can help them make that connection between the child, the teacher, and the layman, and focusing on what's best not only for that child but that school to keep it not only safer, but give that kid an opportunity, chance to grow in a more pleasant environment instead of what's going on now, being bullied, being mocked, being belittled. All these things are bad for our kids, bad for our society. So why can't we get the church involved in being a mentor in that school system or being a mentor in their own backyard. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. And let me ask this. Like, when you think about, like, a lot of parents, they like to get their kids to start working on a summer job. What are some ways that we can encourage summer jobs to help out with our youth?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that inconsistently Greg Fisher has said, we need to provide more jobs for our youth. Well, that was easy for them to say. And all of a sudden, when it comes to the funds, it just disappears. So we have kids out there who are bored to death, especially on spring break, who are bored to death in the summertime, and then they should be involved in something like a shuttle program. That'd be nice, you know, for Johnny to go down to a local grocery store and say, you know, I'd like to get a job, but he's only 15 years old. Why not go ahead and get a mentor in that business and say, hey, I'll take care of this kid, letting me show the ropes of what's going on. So when he goes back to school, he knows exactly what he wants to do, what areas he needs to work on. It could be reading. It doesn't matter. And he knows the reason why he needs to read. He knows the reason why he needs to know math. You know, those things can help out when it comes to reaching the kids and helping that society or even just overall in general.
You know, they always say, idle hands are the devil's workshop.
That's exactly right.
Now, basically, I think it's a good time to kind of switch over a little bit and talk about the issue of education. And Bob, I know that you are a former member of the McCreary County School Board. And so, you know, basically on that experience, why is Jefferson County School rated at the bottom scale in our nation?
Well, one of the things that I have a disagreement with when it comes to policies and procedures is that we are focusing on testing the kids. And now we have put pressure on the teachers to make sure that timeline is being met so the kids can be tested. Now we put pressure on the kids to get them ready to be tested. And we left out the basic concept of what happened to learning. What happened to teaching the basics of reading, writing, arithmetic? And making sure that kid is very fluid in those areas. That's being lost. I mean, I can give you some information that's up front of in front of me on different failures in Jefferson County, but it's kind of worthless right now because we know where it's going on. Now, there are some schools, like Brown School has really been excelling, but that's almost like 10% in Jefferson County. I'm happy for those programs. I'm happy for the schools, but we need to take care of the other guys that's failing. Why do we let that child fail? Because we're focusing on teaching to the test. And to me, that's sad. You agree with that?
Let me tell you something. I am a product of the Jefferson County School Board system. And, you know, we went through the CARA testing. And, you know, I remember back then, the teachers didn't like it and the students didn't like it. And, I mean, both of them freely said that. And, you know, what it really focused on was telling people, kind of how to do what I call sophistry. In other words, not to give the right answers and focus on factual information and stuff, but to really focus on how to say things to where they look like they're educated answers. And, you know, that kind of duplicity and, you know, dishonesty, it's really, I think, something that has wrecked a lot of our system. It's really a way of making your kids amoral when it comes to education.
That's exactly right. Let me give you a little story. It's kind of funny. I did a little volunteer work as a reader in the school system, and I took like one day out of the week and then went down and read to kindergartners. You know, at that in the week, and went in a circle and I read a story. The next week, a teacher went into the library and saw, like, Johnny with kids around him. We're talking about kindergartners, right? He's pretending like he's reading to the kids. And she asked him, what are you doing? I want to be like Bob. I want to read to my friends. And I thought that was kind of funny. I mean, if we're going to set examples, I think that's the best example possible. Encouraging reading, making it fun, you know?
So how can you and I raise those achievement levels? How does one get those achievement levels to the top and help our kids to reach those educational goals?
Well, one thing I've really had a desire for is trying to find ways to reward kids. And in McCrary County, we came up with a reward program that the mission was, or still is, from the awards committee, supports school personnel, parents, community, volunteer programs, students, is to provide incentives to those students, okay, who have succeeded in obtaining the maximum potential and to be effective contributors in their school and community. One thing we focus on is the basis of grades. They have to reach a C or higher. Do an essay contest, which is not very long, for lack of better words. We work on attendance and behavior. We work on other scenarios, such as citizenship and parental involvement. Because to me, you have to have parental involvement in it to kind of, so when a student completes all that, then they have a chance, an opportunity chance, to earn some money, which goes towards their college education, or even, if they want to, open up their own business. So, and a good example is, I was really honored in this. My daughter finally, when she reached 12th grade, she got a $1,200, which went towards her college education. She earned it. It wasn't on my merit, it was on her merit. So why can't we have kids do the same thing in Jefferson County? Why can't they have the opportunity to earn money? Oh, not only that, but reach those goals, which helps them to be a rounded, more productive citizen. So I'm going to, once I learn that opportunity to be mayor, I'm going to present this case to JCP and say, hey, let's help our kids. This is just an example of what we could do for our kids.
Now, let me ask this. I know that the public message has been going on for many years, and I was talking to some young people dealing with the issue of colleges and universities. You grow up with this constant pounding of a message that, you know, if you want to get ahead in life, what you need to do is go through the university system, and it's very, you know, just pounded through. If there's any success, you know, there's a one-size-fits-all that everyone has to go through this system, and, you know, I got to ask you, do you believe that, you know, the normal path to college, is it really one-size-fits-all? Is it really good for every child?
The answer is no. That path to college might look sweet and innocent, but once those kids start walking on it, they find a lot of potholes that they fall right through. The lack of commitment, the lack of understanding on what skills they need to have when it comes to reading, writing, arithmetic. And to me, there's a transitional period between our colleges and universities and the high school, which has fallen apart. And they go in there and saying, hey, I'm going to do this, I'm gung-ho, and all of a sudden they realize their skills are not where they should be. Well, I think there should be another path, which is trade schools. Trade schools will give a student a real good opportunity to learn a skill. Give them a chance to know and learn a skill, but when they get out of high school, they'll be able to get a good job. A high-skilled mechanic, a high-skilled electrician, a high-skilled plumber, bricklayer, painter. There are a lot of different skills out there that a student can really bite into and saying, hey, I like this. This is where my life wants to go. I think I can be successful at it. I can make $21 an hour just at the beginning of my path. And then when I reach 20 years, I can make up to $40 an hour, even more than that. You know? And let's say a 45-year-old been into the plumbing for, let's say, 25 years. He wakes up one day and says, I'm going to go to college. Now he's got money set aside for that instead of having kids who walk into there and graduate and have $70,000 in debt on top of them, and they have to pay that off in a period of time of whatever the, you know, Kentucky says or the law of state. And to me, that's too much pressure for the kid and too much stress on the family. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, this is one of those things where we've seen so much abuse of this system, and it hurts everybody all around. You see the jacking up of tuition rates. just, you know, hyperbolic levels of, like, you know, just all this money for class and all this money for books. And books are a terrible investment. You know, don't get me wrong. I love books. I've got probably, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 books on me in my apartment, okay? But the thing is that the money value, you know, you pay $100 for a book, and then all of a sudden it's like $5 2 years later, you know? And then, like, so you know that they're trying to take a lot of money, and at the end of the day, these students are left in debt, but they have this promise that you'll be able to get such high-paying jobs. Well, the problem is that the universities start offering useless electives. You know, they start offering classes that don't have anything to do with the economy. You know, they offer classes like, oh, let's have sex studies, or, oh, let's study TV. Okay? Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the high schools are passing the buck over to the universities, so they're not teaching as much as what they could. You know, they want to get all the kids hooked on smartphones. And at the end of the day, do these kids ever know how to repair electrical equipment? Are they able to repair their smartphones once they're hooked on them? You know, the fact is that, you know, we had a fellow on, Dick, I think it was Dick Inez, with the Bluegrass Institute, and he talked about how if you look at the education in the high school department for a science degree, then you can't have a straight path that goes from the public school system through the state university. You're not going to get it done because the public schools in the high school department are not properly equipping the kids, and the universities don't want to deal with it. And so basically, when it comes to the regular trade, the promise that they're giving everybody for all this money, most of the time they're starting to fail. And this is just an epidemic. I mean, you look at what was going on in Britain, where it was getting violent because of all this jacking up of tuition for classes. They're not helping the economy anyhow. So, yeah, this is a big epidemic, and, you know, we need real education and education that matters. And so, you know, that should be the first on our list. And yeah, there's some real schooling with trade schools that are going to help the economy. All right, let me kind of move on here a little bit. Now, if a child wants to pursue a college degree or even to save to open a small business, what resources would you offer as Metro Louisville mayor?
Well, as a veteran in the Navy, and I deal with a Fleet Reserve Association, and we do an NCAA contest every year. The sad part about it is last year I went to more like 300 different schools across the country, and close to 1.5% of our students in Jefferson County were involved into that NCAA contest. What I want to do is develop a umbrella effect where we have different icons from different companies, organizations such as UPS, General Electric, Kroger's, different universities under this one umbrella where that a parent, a student, even a teacher can go ahead and click on that icon and find out what resources, what grants, in that case, they can this kid can get involved in, and then it'll help them pursue their career, develop a writing skills, depending on the essay, and then have money set aside for college or even own their own business. And to me, this will help our society. It'll help less stress for our kids, less stress for our parents, and less stress overall on our teachers when you have that type of easy access to that was with both resources.
Yeah, and that's definitely one thing is that we have to make sure that we have good communication. And it just seems like a basic there that often, you know, that's what you see a lot. You see a lot of miscommunications go on. They really slow down and just makes government kind of defunct. But, yeah, if we get people hooked in, logged in, you know, that would definitely make some movement. Now, When we talk about building up a website, though, who's gonna fund the project?
Well, I believe what I'm gonna do is, and as mayor of Louisville, going to focus on how to streamline my administration, and I'll save money by doing that, and hopefully pay the pension off. I would like to set aside at least $50,000 in a budget to promote the website, and not only that, help invest more money into the kids' future. Now, other businesses hopefully will match that fund and be able to focus on what not only best for their future, but best for the city of Louisville. If we create a better atmosphere to providing opportunity and tools for our kids, I think overall we're going to create a better wellness society. Because then we're talking about our next generation, who's going to be the next plumbers, next electricians, next teachers, even the next mayor, you know. If we can't provide an opportunity for them, then it's our fault for not doing so. So the investment that we put into it can be very small, but the outcome is going to be great because we're talking about the teachers for the kids.
Okay. Now, I was thinking about something, and let me go back on a topic. I wanted to kind of address this. This was something you brought up in previous interviews, and I figured we needed to kind of bring it back just because we're talking about, you know, education, but we're also talking about law enforcement. Now, you had proposed the idea of a centralized police department. Would that be and basically that would help the different police offices communicate better and stuff. Is that an option that you've looked into as far as budgeting? Is that a possibility to get that? Would it cost a lot of money? Would we have to, you know, sacrifice a lot of other things in the budget? Or do you believe this is doable?
Well, one of the many failures of our current mayor is that he promised a 21st century technology type police department, a business, a building where they can go in there and be able to do the job. What I want to do is I want to go a step further. I like to take that whole building that we're going to create for the police officers, and they need all the best technology possible, and put it right smack in the middle of Jefferson County, so they're going to have the different directions they can go to, easy access to the information, easy access to the citizens going to the police station and saying they're concerned. Because a lot of times when you go downtown, it's hard to find a parking space, let alone when you're, you know, take care of the problem. So if we put it out there in the middle of Jefferson County, okay, and have easy access to the interstate, then I think we're using our resources wisely. Not only benefiting the police officers, but benefiting the citizens itself. And to me, that's where we need to focus on. We're being proactive now. I believe they have the money, some of it, but a lot of times that money's been moved around to different other priorities, and the police force is being left out. And that's truly sad. You agree?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that's one of the biggest things is, like, you know, a lot of times we have the money, and yet we put it into things that are just very wasteful.
Yes, sir.
I guess that'll go ahead and conclude the interview. I really appreciate having a mayoral candidate who really knows her stuff, has a platform, and is willing to give this stuff out to the community. So I really appreciate having you on, Bob.
It's my pleasure, and it's an honor, sir. I'm a working class guy.
Right,
I'm trying to do this one.
And we will be seeing you on a later episode of Kentuckiana Grassroots Radio. By the way, I do encourage people listening in to check out some of my other episodes. I'm starting to do an apologetic series. Basically, and what that means is the explanation and defense of faith and stuff. A lot of times the media will allow things that are anti-Christian to permeate with their views and their arguments, and yet there's a censorship of our views while they're promoting their agenda. And so I'm wanting to provide Christians with evidence and reasons and things why, you know, faith is just something factual, not just something imaginary or whatever. But basically there is some factual things to help us as we go about, you know, pursuing the American way of life. So encourage people to check that out. And I will catch you all later. And Bob, we'll see you later on Kentucky Grassroots Radio.